Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts, Greta Anderson, together with my co-host, Paul Hertz. Hello, Paul.
Hello again, Greta. We've been seeing each other practically every day now.
Yes, the station has been quite abuzz with activity as we prepare for our spring pledge drive, which abounds with special programming, remote broadcasts, and live music shows at the station to which the public is invited, which I noticed you featured on your Ready Ames Fire show yesterday afternoon.
Yes, the Rhubarb Sessions is what we're calling this series of eight evening performances by accomplished singer-songwriters here in our midst. While we have performers here in the studio often enough, it's a special treat and a special feat to have them out in the general space where the public can relax and enjoy the music in person.
And speaking of treats, we are promising pie of the rhubarb persuasion and other varieties as well to any and all who attend, just as our way of saying thank you for connecting with us, your very own radio station. We aim to serve.
That will be Monday through Thursday of the next 2 weeks, so keep your eye out for the flyers coming in your mail or check it out at khoifm.org.
I just said that we aim to serve, but at KHOI, our real mission is to build community through communication. And so we're giving over the second half of our show today to the Ames Progressive Alliance.
Victoria Shapinski and Ann Kinsel will be here, along with guests from ISU's Green Umbrella.
We'll also touch on a special talk on sustainable agriculture and spirituality that's coming up tonight on campus. But to start us off, Paul, I understand you had some fun attending the dress rehearsal of a rather zany ancient Greek comedy.
That's right. The Birds by Aristophanes may be a classic, but it's hardly highbrow. And as adapted by Ben Schrag and Amanda Pettifish Schrag, it's a pretty rowdy experience with lots of crowd involvement. I was able to grab a couple of quick interviews after the show, and the co-creator, Amanda Pettifish Schrag, agreed to join us in the studio. And here she is, fresh after last night's opening performance.
Welcome, Amanda.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
How was the audience last night? Did you get the laughs you hoped for?
Yeah, we had a great audience. They were very supportive and engaged, and I think a swell time was had by all.
So to catch me and our listening audience up to speed, could you outline the plot of this play that you adapted from Aristophanes?
Sure. In The Birds, we have two comedic heroes, you might say, though Aristophanes' heroes are never quite what we expect. And these two characters, Pisthetaerus and Eulpides, have decided that they are sick of the burdens of living in Athens. They are tired of paying taxes. They are tired of having to follow regulations and laws. And they decide that their lives would be much better if they could somehow live with the birds. So they develop this grand idea that they are going to go and convince the king of the birds to let them set up a kingdom in the sky where they can live the lives of freedom that they want. And from there, as you can imagine, quite a lot of mayhem occurs.
Okay.
There's that this, well, the birds are between the man and the gods, and that's a big part of the play.
Yeah. We're certainly, and that's part of Aristophanes' original text is really dealing with the geography of where the birds are, and that the birds, though small, perhaps are powerful in that they do live right between where the gods in the heavens are and where humans on earth are.
And the gods in Greek literature, anyway, are also always causing a lot of trouble for the people on earth.
Yes, and we continue that tradition in this play.
Okay.
And these two lead characters, Pisthetaerus and Eulpides, it serves the comic purpose well. They're kind of the Cheech and Chong or Abbott and Costello.
Yes, very much so. I think often Aristophanes is credited with creating the foundation of a lot of even the comedy we see today and the Aristophanic hero or sort of the hero with a fairly absurd big idea to pursue is certainly prominently featured here.
And so how would you describe these two characters? Are they different? Do they have a contrast? Or
I think they do. I think Pisistratus considers himself the idea man. It's for audiences to decide whether those are good ideas or not. And Eupides is sort of the sidekick or the backup, though he has his own ideas of what I think the ideal life would and should be.
Wow, so it gets into a little bit of philosophy, even though it's comedic.
I think so. I mean, and I think part of what's fun and probably makes the birds still work today is this idea that the Greeks had that comedy really represents people who are sort of the worst versions of ourselves. These are real id characters, I guess. They pursue what they want when they want it, and that certainly lends it to a certain comedic sensibility, but also is a little tweak of some things that may be pretty familiar to us all.
One of my interviews a couple nights ago was with those two actors. Let's listen to what they have to say.
I'm Adam Croce, and I'm playing Pisistratus.
And I'm Keegan Jackson. I'm playing Eupides.
Playing characters in a modern adaptation of a Greek classic, did you look to previous interpretations of the birds or read translations of the original to get a sense of how to approach the characters?
I didn't necessarily look at the original birds, per se, but I did look at sort of the formula that these Greek comedies took and the archetypes of these characters were and kind of looked at how the nature of those characters played out.
Yeah, I think we once briefly looked at a script and it was so vastly different. We decided it probably wouldn't be horribly helpful. But yeah, kind of to bounce off what you said, we've looked a lot at the dichotomy between the two main leads that are in his comedies and how that's persisted in modern pop culture and things like the Marx Brothers, or It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
This production takes place in the M Shop. How does that make it different from things in Fisher Theater or Stevens Auditorium?
Well, I guess I have performed in here a few other times for other such events, and it is it's a closer environment to the audience, so it feels very much more communal and more we're together rather than we're doing like this official play in Fisher where everyone's rather watching, but they're more a part of it, I would say, here.
Yeah, there's a lot of crowd interaction, so it really lets you get in and do that with the crowd. And then also our director, Amanda Pettifish-Strog, put it beautifully when she said a lot of people probably come to something like a Greek comedy with an idea of this kind of high sort of humor, and it really is relaxed. And the fact that we're in a small space in a bar with some really close to the people kind of helps to break down some of those barriers people might have and really let them just have a good time.
Amanda, you're an assistant professor of theater at ISU. From what you know about Greek plays, would the original version of The Birds been performed in a place more like the M Shop or a place more like Fisher?
Well, really, probably a place like neither, in that Greek festival theater would have happened in big outdoor spaces. But because these festivals would go on for several days, in some ways, I think even though the M Shop is a radically different space, it does lend itself, I think, to the level of informality that the Greek audiences might have come to expect, because comedies were meant to be after all of the tragedies. So you would have a festival and you'd go through many, many tragic plays, and then you'd have sort of the palate cleanser, if you will, or the fun, the big party of the comedy. And I think that sense of it, we have certainly tried to pull into our work in the M Shop.
And that's kind of the way the whole ISU theater season worked out.
Yes.
This year. This is right before finals week.
Yes. We have commented many times how nice it is to be working on really a bold comedy here at the end of the semester.
The characters described, or the actors described, audience interaction, and so did Paul when he was describing his experience. Either of you, can you tell me what that's about?
I think we have, we've certainly told the actors and worked in the script to make it something that it is not that the audience is necessarily forced to participate in any particular way, but rather that we invite them in at multiple points to really be actively engaged with what we're doing. And there are, because the M Shop is a fairly non-traditional theater space, we use the aisles as acting areas. We have characters frequently running through the audience, in part because we need that space, but also I think to lend a comedic element, but also this little bit of mayhem that tends to come in Aristophanic comedy, and in a small space, the audience plays a really crucial role in us being able to do that.
One of the most memorable aspects of that for me were there's a few sing-alongs.
Okay, so there's music then.
Yes, there is some music. And we get to experience what a group of perhaps not particularly wise humans and not particularly wise birds put together in terms of their musical entertainments.
Sounds raucous. So,
one of the most famous modern adaptations of Aristophanes' play The Frogs was even performed in a swimming pool at Yale.
Yeah, one of the great things, I think, anytime you're working with something that has this much history behind it, is that there's a really long production history to refer back to in terms of what formulas seem to work and how those formulas change through time. And that's been, I think, critical to us, not only as a production team and a cast and a crew, but also certainly in doing the adaptation itself.
Yes, the adaptation of Aristophanes, that's really critical for the comedy to work.
Yes. For Ben and I in doing the adaptation, the really critical question is how do you retain all of these very, very funny things that have, in many respects, the fact that you have two characters complaining about taxes and rules and lawmakers who don't do anything and corrupt religious officials, there is a certain level of universality to what they're talking about. But we wanted to be sure that a lot of what would have been for the ancient Greeks, very contemporary references, a la Saturday Night Live for us, became as relevant and as pertinent to an audience of college students ranging up to, really we planned for a broad age range represented in our audiences, but certainly something that had enough pop culture references to really retain that Greek comedy feel in the same way for our audiences that we hope it would have worked for Greeks.
This process of adaptation is one of the things I talked to Ben about after the dress rehearsal.
So the idea to make our own adaptation of The Birds really is one of those things that just emerged. As a theater professor, Amanda is constantly directing things, looking for things to direct, and theater departments often sort of have a rotation, and they'll look for like a classical piece to put in there. And sometimes that goes to Shakespeare and sometimes that goes to the Greeks. And she's directed other adaptations of The Birds before. And we always liked them a lot. But, Greek comedy was intended to be very of its moment. And if you're, directing an adaptation from the 40s or 50s, it doesn't quite succeed in that same way. And so we always had it in the back of our brain to do something kind of sillier and more relatable to the audience. So, and we've, worked on several projects in the meantime, and we have a history of writing short, entertaining Shakespeare shows they call green shows, actually in Iowa City. So it was a very natural step. So, obviously we're working with a story that is not original to us. The tale of Pisistratus and Eupolis wanting to escape civilization with its lawyers and its debtors and its, all politicians and all these plagues on humanity, right? And going to live this free and peaceful life with the birds where everyone can do whatever they want. I mean, this is an old story, but it has a lot of resonance with us. But we also, I mean, I particularly grew up watching the Marx Brothers. Amanda and I love the show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And of course, you've got all these other sort of modern comic stuff in between that we're drawing on, like Strange Brew and Pinky and the Brain, and a little bit of Amy Schumer, I think, in there as well. Just a little undercurrent. But it was fun to draw on things that we've enjoyed from the rest of pop culture. And infuse it with this really old tale that still, I think, feels pretty fresh. I don't know. I like people with a lot of debt and complaining about politicians and making lawyer jokes feels like it could have been written yesterday. And honestly, and this is the romance of our story, the reason we knew that each other were, you know, the one we wanted to stay the rest of our lives with was because we could crack each other up. So, you know, that had a very organic element to the process where we just liked making dumb jokes.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Greta Anderson, together with Paul Hertz, and we have Amanda Pettifish Schrog in the studio. That was her husband, Ben Schrog, with whom she co-wrote an adaptation of the ancient Greek comedy The Birds by Aristophanes, which is playing this weekend at the M Shop in Memorial Union on campus. Amanda, it sounds like you have such a fun time with your husband doing this at work, but I'm just curious, how was it working with your husband on something so intensively? Were you always on the same wavelength, or did you have some more difficult hashing out sessions?
Well, I think it's one of the reasons that I feel like we work well together is we do have a marvelous good time as we do, and we've adapted other work and written other things together. But I think, as in any good collaboration, we see things a little bit differently, and that part of that tension, not in a bad way, but just tension of ideas, actually leads us, I think, when we have those moments of disconnect, if we stick with it, we actually find a much better solution by kind of combining the challenges we both find within a given joke, or the way the plot's moving forward, or the way a character may be manifesting in what we think is not quite the right way. So I think it's a really productive process, and thankfully we are, I think, good partners and really just enjoy working with each other a lot.
And that's great, and I think it really came across in the production.
Well, thank you.
And when I talked to Ben, he was loath to reveal too many details about the adaptation. But now that you've already had one performance, perhaps you can tell our listening audience a little bit about how you updated the content of the play using current events.
Well, I think we really tried, in addition to some of the tone that Ben kind of mentioned in his interview about thinking about contemporary, just comedic references that ring true to a modern audience, we also, Ben and I are both a little bit of political junkies, so we've certainly, and there's a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot of content that's plot specific related to politicians, but the idea of politicians figures in prominently. And of course, being in the middle of an election cycle, there is a lot of fodder to pull in those contemporary references. And I think also just trying to really notice not only what we're responding to in pop culture, but noticing what our kids are responding to, what the students are responding to, what shows up in your Facebook feed. Those kinds of relevant details are where we started to pull in, I think, just some updating and some sort of new ideas within the play.
Was there updating of the script after you saw how the actors were responding to it?
Yeah, and it's one of the areas I really have to commend. We just couldn't have asked for a greater group of student actors here. They've been so willing to experiment and let us try different things with the text. I think we went into rehearsals with a fairly intact text, But you discover things as it gets up on its feet and as they start bringing their own sensibilities and intentions. And so there have been quite a few changes from the start of rehearsals to now, just as we've figured out what really makes the joke punchier, what really makes the character relationship full of good kind of dramatic tension. And the actors have been really pivotal in not only allowing that to happen, but in helping those discoveries happen.
I heard that Donald Trump is referenced.
Yes. Yes. How could you not in today's world when we reference a political world or a political cycle?
Is there a hair joke?
Well, it's Donald Trump, right?
Oh, goody. Well, anyway, it sounds like a wonderful show, and I'm looking forward to attending the matinee on Sunday at 2. There will also be performances at 7:30 tonight and tomorrow night. Can we just get the tickets at the door?
You can get tickets at the door, and they're also available through Midwest Tix. So,
okay.
Ben offered a very nice plug of the show in the interview I did. Why don't we go out with that? Thanks for coming in today, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks.
So here's what I would say to somebody who is thinking about coming to the Byrds. One, it's an old classic Greek play, but it does not feel like it at all. The aim here is to have, 90 minutes of solid surprise and fun that could be ripped straight from Saturday Night Live or the equivalent. So come, it's 90 minutes, it's fast, it's fun, it's furious, it's a little fractured. It's going to keep you guessing and hopefully keep you laughing.
Again, that play, The Byrds, is this weekend. You'll find details on our website. Next, we hear from a past resident of Ames. He lived here from 1995 to 2005. He is visiting Ames to give a talk this evening that is co-sponsored by Practical Farmers of Iowa. Robert Karp is now the co-director of the Biodynamic Association, headquartered in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and will speak tonight about spirituality and sustainable agriculture at 7 p.m. I knew Robert from back when he lived in Iowa, and when I emailed him to ask him what he was doing, he said he was going to nail his theses to the door of the ISU agronomy department, referring, of course, to Martin Luther and the 95 Theses back in 1517, I believe. And I think I must have taken him literally. And when I gathered from the beginning of our interview that he wasn't actually going to nail anything to any door, I was a little off-put, as you will hear. Tell me about the how you connect spirituality, and can you just give us a brief thumbnail of your thesis?
Sure.
Or theses?
Well, if you look at the history of the sustainable agriculture movement, you see that it's largely come into being through farmers and leading activists and consumers who've gone through some kind of inner shift in their consciousness. Their world's somehow been turned upside down, and they've come to see the world differently. And this sometimes expresses itself as a kind of awakening of conscience. It sometimes expresses itself as just a new way of seeing nature and wanting to relate to the natural world. And so what I'm suggesting is that at the heart of the sustainable agriculture movement is really a very deep spiritual impulse to renew our relation to nature, to one another, that actually there's kind of a new worldview emerging out of this movement and other movements like it in the world right now. I call it a post-materialistic worldview.
And how does this relate with the scientific worldview of the institution that dominates, for instance, Ames, Iowa?
Yes. That's one reason I was very happy to bring this talk to Iowa State University. Well, I would say that the materialistic worldview obviously has its benefits and accomplishments and its place, but it's extremely limited in terms of all that's actually taking place in nature and in the human being. You're really only able to grasp one small part of it. And that one small part of the world can, to some degree, be understood through mechanistic thinking, through the analogy of a mechanism, of a machine. And so this has led to a science that sees the world as a kind of machine and increasingly sees human beings as machines. And we're beginning to see the negative consequences of this way of seeing the world and the technologies that flow from this way of seeing the world. And I would suggest there's a lot more going on in the world and in the human being than can be understood through that one lens. So I believe we're at a moment in human evolution where we need to begin to develop a more holistic science that can actually help us address the myriad problems that have emerged in the world, many of which have their origin in the limitations of materialistic science.
And by materialistic, you don't mean necessarily greedy, but you mean understanding things as subject to fixed laws.
Purely physical laws.
Right.
That the world consists only of that which we can see, touch, smell, or measure. But of course, this worldview gives rise to greed and certain desire to manipulate the world around us as though it were just a machine, or to take from the world what we want for ourselves, not understanding the reciprocal nature of our relation to the world.
Neat. Okay. Now, let's delve back into your past. You were instrumental in starting a big part of the local foods movement here in Ames. I understand you were involved in the formation of the first CSA.
That's correct. Yes, I helped start Magic Beanstalk CSA. Those were really extraordinary years in my life, being part of a small community of people that had a vision for a new way of connecting farmers and consumers that had more integrity. I think this is another kind of awakening that a lot of farmers and consumers have had, is that, you know, when a farmer is not just selling their food into an abstract marketplace, but actually meeting the people who are eating their food, there's a remarkable connection that begins to form and an appreciation of one another that's transformative. And that's really why the local food movement has caught fire, is because people experience that their humanity comes back when they are able to have economic interactions that are so intimate and real as opposed to so abstract, like most of the rest of the economy.
Right. So can you tell us again where you're going to be speaking and when and how we can attend?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm speaking at 7 o'clock in the Agronomy Building.
Ooh, the Agronomy Building.
Yeah, isn't that great? I'm going to be right there. It's room 2020 in the Agronomy Building.
So this is co-sponsored by?
By the Rudolf Steiner Study Group in Ames and Practical Farmers of Iowa, and the Biodynamic Association, which is the organization I work for.
And in the talk, are you going to talk about Rudolf Steiner and his ideas about farming?
I will. It won't be the main focus, but I hope to get to that point in the talk where we can begin to elucidate what a more holistic science might look like and Rudolf Steiner's contribution toward that.
Okay, and then Saturday, weather permitting, where will you be?
We'll be at Mustard Seed Community Farm from 1 to 2:30 for a potluck and a short talk and a hands-on activity.
That sounds intriguing, as many of the biodynamic methods are.
Yes.
Okay, well, we look forward to seeing you this weekend back in Ames after continuing your career in food sciences or food spirituality up in Wisconsin.
Thank you, Greta. I'm looking forward to seeing lots of old friends and associates.
Okay, Robert Karp, co-director of the Biodynamic Association in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I understand that the site of that Saturday afternoon potluck is and biodynamic demo may have moved. The weather may not be permitting. And so please check with PFI, Practical Farmers of Iowa, for an update on that location. You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we turn the show over now to Victoria Shapinski and Ann Kinzel of Ames Progressive Alliance. Take it away, Victoria.
Okay, all right. Good morning, and thanks again for letting us have this time slot on the fourth Friday of each month. It goes around quickly. Unfortunately, we seem to always have a lot of things going on with the Alliance to share. It's been, there was Earth Day, but it seems more like Earth Month, and we've been very lucky in our community that the university and the community have hosted a variety of events. And apparently something else that we just heard about in the last interview. Today, our plan for each month is to ask some members of the Alliance, which is a growing group of organizations at the university, ISU, and in Ames that have progressive initiatives make our community better. And the idea is to invite someone or some group to join us. And this month we've asked the Green Umbrella, which is a very organized and active group at ISU, to come and tell us a little bit about their accomplishments and their goals, and also to let us all know how we can help them and in their endeavors. So joining us is Megan Copenhafer, Kat Betts, and Jordan Mill. And if you want to get started and maybe tell us a little bit about what the Green Umbrella is and what some of the accomplishments have been over the last year or so and what your goals are. Appreciate it.
Sure. So the Green Umbrella is an umbrella organization, as the name suggests, and our main goal is to bring together different sustainability-minded organizations. Both we try to achieve the social, economic, and environmental sides of sustainability with our coalition of groups that we try to bring together. And we as a certain entity in and of its ourselves, we plan events for those clubs to showcase what it is that they do. And we also have a second part to our club called the Sustainability Network, which is a monthly or so meeting between all of our participating clubs. And they come together. We talk about issues regarding sustainability in our world and on our campus. And this past semester, we've been talking about Earth Week because that was a very large event for us. And so it's very necessary to have everybody on board with that.
We had a good showing on campus, and we were fortunate to have a table there also. And it was a steady flow of people interested in what was going on. So can you maybe talk a little bit about who was represented at the Earth Day event?
So we had over 40 organizations, I think, this year at our Earth Day tabling event outside the library, which we do every year, and it was the most that we've had so far. About half were local community organizations like Ames Progressive Alliance. We also had like Wheatsfield Co-op, and the other half were student organizations such as help me out. There was
Greenhouse Group,
Iowa State, Renew ISU, Iowa State Engineers Without Borders, the Climate Reality Group, Entomology Club. So there's a really wide range of student organizations that are involved in our network of sustainability that in some way emulate sustainability in their own ways. So,
well, I was encouraged to see that there were so many participants, and I'm also personally very encouraged when I see young people understanding that we have some big issues in front of us and that we all need to play a role if we're looking for a solution. Last week, we were able to join with some students from Ames High School who are doing a project to encourage local businesses to use BPA-free receipt paper. And they're also hoping this program will continue, will take on other very specific projects to make those small differences, because that's how you get to a solution with those small differences. Are there specific issues or initiatives that you or some of the other clubs have taken on that are moving toward saving the planet?
I think one of the most interesting clubs that we've had the the pleasure of partnering with this year is the Iowa State Entomology Club. The current president, or I guess outgoing president, unfortunately, Javon Latimer, has been encouraging entomophagy, which is the consumption of bugs for protein. So kind of looking at more energy efficient ways of producing our protein. And she firmly believes that bugs are the way to do that. She has a lot of research to back that up. And the cookies that she had for sampling were quite delicious.
Okay. Well, maybe we can make that a topic of a Donna and Lana show.
There you go.
Bug cuisine. Kat, you've been a little quiet over there. Now, you're a sophomore in Global Resource Systems.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what brought you to the Green Umbrella.
You know, it was just, I mean, they have such a big presence, I guess, on campus. I mean, they do so many great things. So I really just want to get involved in all their initiatives. And I've been lucky enough to be an executive member. I'll be the director of events next year. So I'm going to be playing a big role in events like Earth Week and Sustainapalooza.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sustainapalooza, that's one of your biggest events of the year, isn't it?
Yes, it was. And Megan and I were on the committee for that. Mm-hmm.
Great. Yes, we participated in Sustainapalooza as well. I mean, we are really happy to be able to come together with you. So I want to know, Jordan, what brought you to the Green Umbrella?
Well, it was many years ago. I'm a fifth-year senior. But I started with the Green Umbrella when I was a sophomore, and it kind of spoke to a lot of my values in sustainability, conservation, because to me sustainability is kind of like equal to responsibility, just being stewards of our land and preventing as much waste as we can in our daily lives. And the Green Umbrella was a club that made me feel pretty impactful on campus because of our like Kat and Megan have said, we have such a presence on campus and ability to communicate through so many groups to so many students and just try to make people more aware. That's the real goal, is awareness about sustainability, getting people to be just a little bit more likely to have that one thought where, can I recycle this? Mm-hmm. Or do I have to buy this? Or just making those little daily steps. And so I felt, you know, I just found a passion for that. I found a group of people who became some of my best friends while I was here in college. And it's a really great club at Iowa State that we would recommend anyone to come and join us.
That's a great story. So what about you, Megan? What brought you to the Green Umbrella?
So I started in environmental science. When I came into college, I knew that I wanted to do something about climate change in particular. My high school teachers had done a really good job of letting us know, you know, that we have a role in making a difference with climate change. And as I got involved on campus and started to look at the clubs that I was going to join, because I had been given the old rule of thumb that you should join one from your major and, like, one fun one. So my fun one was Quidditch, and my one from my major, they had been talking about the different options. And they said, oh, and then there's the Green Umbrella, and they're kind of like sustainability ninjas. Like, they jump out at you and reward you for, like, holding a reusable water bottle. And I was like, that sounds awesome. So I showed up to the first meeting, and that year at the first meeting there were, like, 40 people. It was amazing. And, you know, the group kind of grows and dwindles as people kind of figure out where their niche is. But I got involved, and we started planning an event right away, and I was able to take a big role in leadership right away in the club and feel like I was reaching out to, students, like Jordan was saying, and making an impact even in my first year on campus.
Well, you know, I haven't had my coffee this morning, but I don't think I need any. If I start my day with three sustainability ninjas, I'm ready to go. Okay, so thank you.
So do you think the university as a whole is taking moving forward in as a student population and understand as this being a priority in the lives of students, that we understand what's going on globally with the environment?
I think...
I mean, you have your club, but what do you think the university's role is or maybe should be, and what students do understand and maybe what students need to get more involved in?
You know, Mary has a lot of really great initiatives within her office of...
And that's Mary Rankin, who's the sustainability...
Director of Sustainability.
Director of...
For Iowa State.
Yes, I didn't know her title. Thank you. I know her.
Thank you for the clarification on that. Yeah, and so within the Office of Sustainability, they have a lot of really great initiatives for letting people know about ways that they can be sustainable on campus and looking at things like the solar trash compactors and the they're actually expanding that. Government and student body approved how many?
45 new Big Belly trash compactors, if you've seen those on campus. They replace regular trash cans at a 3-to-1 ratio and are really convenient because they're GPS connected to the facility's personnel, so they don't have to go out and check all the time. They know when the bin is full, and they can strategize and reduce fuel costs driving around. So they're really convenient, and we're pretty happy student government has allocated some funds for more of those.
Excellent. We're starting to see some of those around Ames as well.
That's
I don't
right.
know if
yeah.
you've had a chance to see, but now there's a nice joint campus city initiative, less trash
indeed
collection.
Well, and there's also, as far as power generation, there's a turbine on campus, and also I believe there's a solar panel. And I, as we move forward with the Community Solar Initiative here in Ames, we're hoping that that's something that the university will also be supporting, which has been one of the main things that the Ames Progressive Alliance has been working on. And it's actually going to happen. It is on the city's goal list, and we will be seeing a solar array. So I'm hoping that the university is looking at that and also wondering what else we're doing in big ways to we're a college community. You know, we should be taking on some pretty large initiatives.
So, you know, nothing is ever all peaches and roses, right? So in your work with students, what have been some of the barriers to getting your message out? How would you like to see things be a little different? Tell us about that.
I think one of the things that we struggle with, because we are connected to the university in such a strong way with Mary being our advisor, Mary Rankin again, we often toe the line between promoting sustainability and wanting to also keep what the university's goals are in mind, because we don't I think all of us are proud of the university that we attend, and we understand that there are some politics involved, obviously. And so we can't be an outwardly political group. And so sometimes we lose some membership because we're not rallying and things like that under the Green Umbrella's name. That being said, members of our organization do participate in political activism. But I do know, like, after talking with a couple people who have kind of been in and out of the club, that was one thing that they were looking to have more of. And so that's we sometimes struggle with membership because we can't play that, I suppose, radical of a role. And I don't know that we would want to either, because we're as the umbrella organization, it's our job to try to invite everyone into the sustainability conversation, even the people who may be initially looking at the organization, you would say, do they really fit our message? But if we don't invite the people who aren't fitting our message into that conversation, we won't see change.
Sure, that's a difficult place to be sometimes. Are there other clubs on campus that accommodate a more political, environmental view that you're aware of?
I think a big one that we just recently worked with on Earth Day that's kind of gaining a lot of presence is like the Young Democratic Socialists. Mm. They had a huge environmental presence in their message. And, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, their table was really successful and everything like that.
So it's a big tent. There's room for everybody on campus.
Yes. Yep.
That's great. What do you think about that, Jordan? Are there any other groups that you're aware of that, besides the Young Democratic Socialists, that might have an interest, say, in your ag college? Or
One that comes to mind is the Climate Reality Group. Are they the same as Next Gen Climate, or is that that's the new name?
Right.
Okay. So yeah, that's one that has had a pretty strong campus influence, I guess, or presence in the last year or so. I think their objectives have been related to climate change activism. They're also a club on campus called Activus has been around for many years, and they are always promoting a petition for the ISU power plant to divest from coal and move towards more renewable sources of energy, which we know right now the Iowa State power plant is completing in addition to facilitate more natural gas for
it's interesting. Professor Emily Heaton in the Agronomy College is working with the University of Iowa to add a miscanthus or perennial grass mix to their power plant, and they're going to be quite green in the near future.
Very good.
Yeah.
I know. Iowa State Power Plant does mix in, I think, some things like wood, maybe some plants like miscanthus. I don't know the details on that, but they do use some cogeneration.
Right.
Well.
I think they're looking at, with Professor Robert Brown, perhaps some opportunities to do some lignocoal and other things to bring the plant to a more benign environmental profile. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, and I think the university has worked with the city, and as the city has moved away from, there is currently, that's what's happening right now, moving from coal to natural gas, I think some ordering gets done together. But, you know, the eventual goal is to move away from natural gas to completely, non-fossil fuel generation of power. So I think, you know, there's always been a good relationship in those sorts of entities between the city and the university.
Now, we were really pleased to be part of your Earth Day festivities last week, but I'd like to know, is there a way that city residents and Green Umbrella participants can work together on other initiatives in the coming year?
Yeah, I think that we're always looking for opportunities to join other initiatives that might be happening in the community. So the Green Umbrella members have participated in various community events. And so I know last year they had like a small version of an Earth Day tabling event at the library that we participated in, and a lot of our members participate in, like, even attending the farmers market. And so we're definitely always interested in those opportunities. As far as a partnership goes for other initiatives, I know we participated in the debate that was held by the Ames Progressive Alliance. And so we're always happy to look for opportunities like that, maybe even getting the Ames Progressive Alliance involved with some of our campus events along that same vein. And we're also always looking to expand. So right now we are largely event planning based, sort of serving as the promotion for those clubs that are a part of our organization. But,
Well, I think you've given some ideas on opportunities that we have to coordinate with you next year. Fortunately, you're not graduating. Your parents may not feel that way, but I'm glad that you're still going to be around. But we have a long list of things, and like you, we're a volunteer organization, so you have to prioritize. But on our list is looking at initiatives for the city to incorporate composting, for example. Mm-hmm. There's a Lincoln Corridor for a plan that's going on, and that in conjunction with other streets in the city, there's this complete streets idea where we consider other forms of transportation besides cars. And I think that's also another way that we move forward, is looking at improving the ability to be a pedestrian and to be a biker and to be, you know, moving away. You know, we still need our cars, but, you know, we need to be also incorporating and encouraging those other things. So I think there are opportunities for us to do some things together. And I certainly want to, you know, make you aware of what I know that's going on, or our group knows what's going on in the city, so that we can do things together. Because that's really what the Ames Progressive Alliance is all about, is leveraging our local resources, our local government, and by having a number of different groups working together, that our voices are going to be stronger and we're going to be able to make our community a better place to live. So I want to thank you. I told you, time just goes by really quickly when you sit down here and you think you have a lot of time, and all of a sudden it goes by really quickly. But I want to thank Jordan Mill and Kat Betts and Megan Copenhafer for joining us this morning. They're amazing students, and they're doing great things on campus that affect all of us in Ames. So thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you for coming this morning. Before we leave, we have a few more seconds. I just want to know, what's the club going to focus on next year? Do you have an agenda for next year?
Next year, what's really central to our club's progression will be expanding Earth Week, as well as expanding the network and sort of really developing the network. The network has been around for 2 years now, and it's finally gaining a lot of momentum. And so I think we could really start to see some cool initiatives come out of the partnerships from that.
That's great. Well, Kat's going to be the events chair, right?
Yes, director of events. So I'll have a huge role to play.
You're going to be a busy girl.
Right, and we have your number. So.
Yes.
We'll have a few ideas for you.
Thanks again for coming. And we look forward to seeing what you're going to do next year and participating with you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having
us.
Thank
you. So maybe let's take the last few minutes that we have here and just do a little wrap-up on what the Ames Progressive Alliance has been up to. And Ann and I can... You want to do a little recap on where we've been and what we're doing?
Well, we went to the, the Smart Energy with the City?
Oh, the Eco Fair.
And we talked to a lot of people about our solar desires, the initiative to have a solar array provide some of the power in Ames. And we took that same message to the Earth Day event at Iowa State, where we also successfully tabled.
We're gathering a lot of signatures. There is a website, Ames Community Solar Initiative. Even though it is currently on the city's list of goals, having a number of names that you can add yours to through the website is just another means of saying, look how many people want to support this. So please visit that website.
And before we leave, there are two events coming up on campus. Stash the Trash, Saturday, April 30th, 8:30 to 2 p.m., Ryman Gardens, and the Art Supply Swap, Saturday, April 30th, 10 to 4 p.m., the Workspace at the Memorial Union.
And our next month's plan for a guest is to focus on the solar array. So get in touch with us if you have any specific questions that you'd like to have us address when we have our guests next month. Also visit the Ames Progressive Alliance Facebook page. Like us, and we post pretty regularly to that place. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Victoria. And Anne, did you mention the website address for signing your name to the
AmesCommunitySolar.org?
Great. And maybe if you go to the Facebook page of Ames Progressive Alliance,
there is more information there about the solar array. Yes.
Okay. Well, this is only your second or third segment that you've done solo, and you are already sounding like pros. I'm really amazed.
Well, thank you. It's the guests that help us.
Okay. You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts, Greta Anderson and Paul Hertz.
Earlier in the show, we discussed the production, The Birds, an adaptation of the ancient Greek play by Ben and Amanda Pettifish-Schrag, playing this weekend. Amanda was in the studio with us.
I also spoke with Robert Karp, a former Ames resident, who will be back in Ames speaking on the subject of spirituality and sustainable agriculture on Friday. And I guess that's today. And demonstrating methods of biodynamic farming tomorrow, Saturday. And, of course, finally, we were joined by the Ames Progressive Alliance, Victoria Shapinski, Ann Kinzel, and three students.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoyfm.org. That's khoyfm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Thanks to the help of Ron Carson and Mark Harris with the related technical details.
Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeKeest. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
KHOI welcomes volunteers of all ages and descriptions. If you have skills to share and have a passion for community, come by the station at 410 Douglas Avenue or contact us through our website, khoyfm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.